This week on Behind the Lens, New Orleans City Council members will consider whether to rescind their approval of Entergy's proposed power plant. We'll look ahead to next Wednesday's vote. We'll also look at leadership questions at the Orleans Parish School Board. A controversy over LGBT protections may have cost one candidate a new job. And Louisiana's small town water systems are in trouble. Many are running out of money to maintain clean, healthy water service.
Some tough decisions coming for these small communities. If they can't afford to borrow and they can't afford to pay, can they join? If they can't join, do they go back to the days of everybody taking care of themselves in their own yard?
We'll speak with the state health officer about a growing problem. I'm Tom Wright. You're listening to Behind the Lens, a podcast by The Lens.
Brought to you by community support. Learn more at support.thelensnola.org.
The City Council will revisit its vote to approve a proposed power plant by Entergy New Orleans. Opponents of the plant called that 2018 vote into question after the discovery that actors were paid to speak in favor of the proposal. Michael Isaac Stein has details.
The resolution, it's being introduced by council members Jason Williams, Helena Moreno, and Jared Brossette. That trio is actually pretty significant. Moreno is the chair of the utility committee. Brossette and Williams are the only two current council members who were on the council to vote on this power plant last March. So, and they had voted in favor. So it's a significant trio. And basically what the resolution does is if it passes, it would rescind the council's prior approval for Entergy to build this $211 million plant in New Orleans East. The other thing that this resolution would do, City Council is facing two separate lawsuits related to their decision to approve the plant. And those two lawsuits, the plaintiffs have agreed to drop the suit if the council rescinds their prior decision. By passing this resolution, the council would also be avoiding two lawsuits.
So Wednesday's meeting will cover more than simply rescinding the earlier vote from last year, correct?
That's right. So what the decision really came down to when City Council first passed this plant, it's something called a P6 contingency. So this is a very unlikely but reportedly catastrophic transmission failure that could happen, in a couple different situations. But Entergy proposed this power plant as a solution to that P6 contingency, as a way to avoid it. Opponents from the beginning had argued that there were cheaper alternatives to solving this transmission problem. So part of the resolution is not only to rescind the earlier vote, but to start a process to consider those alternatives that opponents have been talking about for over a year now.
Do we have a clear indication of what those alternatives might be?
The main alternative that opponents had been talking about prior to the approval of the plant had been a transmission fix, which Entergy itself had estimated at, I think it was, something like $57 million, significantly cheaper than the $211 million power plant they're proposing. And actually at the approval process, there were council members who kind of expressed their frustration that Entergy had not done the work to actually bring them that alternative to vote on. But, at the time of the vote, they simply hadn't done the analysis that would have allowed City Council to move forward with any alternative.
So the meeting will be next week?
Yeah, it'll be on Wednesday at 1 p.m., taking the place of the, regularly scheduled utility meeting. And, it will be a full council meeting, meeting that they can pass, resolutions as a full body.
Okay. We'll look to your reporting to update us on that. Michael Isaac Stein, thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom.
Leslie Ellison's candidacy for president of the Orleans Parish School Board is over for now. The board vice president drew criticism for her opposition to specific protections for LGBT students in state schools. Marta Jusen has updates from a heated board meeting Thursday night.
This had been kind of simmering all week as people found out that Vice President Leslie Ellison, who's been on the board for a while, wanted to run for board president. that was kind of a hot button issue because she's openly opposed adding protections for LGBTQ students in state policy and charter contracts in the past. So what ended up happening is the board voted to suspend its rules of term-limited people and allowing them to run again. And so Ellison, who's currently the vice president, was reelected vice president. This was after an hour of public comment where many majority of people who spoke against her candidacy for president. That didn't end up happening, but she is still the vice president.
Did she have any reaction to that comment, by the way?
She said things like her record stood for itself. She didn't really address the issue. And when she did, she had said that this was about religious freedom, essentially. At the last minute, board member Sarah Usden nominated board member Nolan Marshall. And so then when it came down to voting, actually, it was a 4-3 split, and Ellison won by one vote.
Meantime, there was also movement on funding for the former charter school known as Harney. Would you explain that, please?
Harney was recently taken over by the Orleans Parish School Board after Superintendent Lewis threatened to revoke its charter. Then they just gave it up. But the issue here is that the district had not approved a budget for the school. Can't run a school without a budget, or at least you can't pay employees. So the concern here was that the district was not going to be able to make payroll next week if the board didn't approve a budget last night. But they did approve a $1.2 million allocation, essentially recognizing student revenue that was going to be coming in anyways. So they will be able to make payroll.
All right. Marta Jusen reporting on the Education Beat for The Lens. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Louisiana State Health Officer warns that local communities will have to make tough choices, and soon, as they cope with public water systems that are showing their age and falling apart, especially in rural areas of the state. 88% of Louisiana residents get their drinking water from public systems, but more and more of those utilities are on the edge of failure. We spoke with Dr. Jimmy Guidry about the problem this week.
There's an evaluation that was done by EPA, a report done back in 2011 that said over the next 20 years, the infrastructure for drinking water in Louisiana would require about an investment of about $5.3 billion to address the fact that the infrastructure, pipes, treatment plants would need to be replaced if not maintained. And so what we're seeing is a lot of these very small systems which we have in the state are not performing because they're aging and not able to keep up with what's happening out there.
The system age is a special point of concern given that, according to health department data, I believe about 58% of these public water systems were built before 1960. From a health standpoint, Dr. Guidry, what particular concerns are there for some of these older systems?
The pipes that actually bring your water to, from the treatment plant to your homes, as they get older, if they start leaking and they're not maintained, not replaced, what you have is loss of water. So it requires a lot more treatment for that water because you're losing water through the leaks. So as you look at these aging systems and if they're not maintained, their ability to keep the disinfectant at a level that protects your health is what's of most concern. So you might lose pressure and you may as well lose the ability for disinfection, which puts contamination and infection higher on the list of possibilities. So the impact to your health would definitely be negative if these things are allowed to get out of control.
These rural systems, are they for the most part able to maintain the sort of disinfection that is called for by state and federal guidelines?
It's getting harder and harder because what we're seeing in rural communities is that there are more and more where the little communities are not thriving, where people are moving, And when they move, that means there are less customers to help pay for these treatments and water treatment plants and plumbing. So it's critical to understand that when these little communities start failing and they're not able to protect the health of their citizens because they don't have enough citizens out there, it's becoming cost prohibitive to try to meet all the requirements. So we focused on trying to get some of these little systems to combine and work together. So one, they can have more customers, and two, they can try to meet the regulations, the requirements. But again, if the populations are small and there's a lot of pipes to try to get these populations to combine systems, it's not an easy fix. So when you look at Louisiana, we have over 1,300 water systems. And when you look at other states our size, they might have 500 or 600 water systems. There's quite a bit of difference here. We started out with a lot of very small rural communities years and years ago, and some of those communities are struggling to survive.
What else is the state trying to do to help some of these rural water systems do their job and survive and maintain service for their customers?
One of the things we do is we educate the folks that are responsible for these water systems. Many times it's the mayor and the alderman or leadership in that community. So we spend a lot of time educating them on what it takes to maintain their systems and make sure that the water quality protects health. When there's not enough funds to do these things, when people don't pay enough, so what we're finding in small communities, perhaps a rate is not enough to cover the cost, so people aren't paying enough to cover the cost of maintaining the system. We try to work with those communities to say, what can we do about this? And certainly to get to be an elected official in a small rural community requires having the ability to manage funds. So what we're seeing in some of these small communities is where the water fund, the water rate, is being used to help fund operating the town and not going into the water system. So over and over again, when we're seeing a failure at this point, and the legislative auditors are getting involved and looking at the fiscal management of a town or a village, we're finding that we're having to place a fiscal administrator, someone who can get there and work with the books and the funding and make some tough decisions, because it's hard to get elected as an official when you make these tough decisions of cutting jobs and maintaining failing infrastructure. So we're finding several small communities that are being brought to the Capitol and going before the fiscal committee and agreeing to having a fiscal administrator because they cannot work within the confines of their budgets.
One of the mechanisms I've read about in my research here is the revolving loan fund. I wonder if you might help explain what that drinking water revolving loan fund is all about and how it assists these rural systems.
The federal government, EPA, has placed money under our purview to lend out to people at low interest. And these communities have to qualify that they can repay that low interest loan. And as people borrow the money, do some maintenance on their system and replacement of parts of their system that are failing, they're paying back their loan, and the payback goes back into the fund to be used for other systems. So many systems are able to borrow money at low interest and maintain their systems. Some of these smaller systems, or the folks don't qualify for the loan because they can't repay the loan. So it's a much tougher decision on how to help them when they're really looking for a grant, funds that don't need to be paid back, but there's very little funds for grants. Most of the funding is for low interest loans, and when they can't qualify, they can't maintain or continue to support their system without people there paying more for their rates and people not being able to get a low interest loan.
Do especially our non-urban communities, do residents there need to start considering clean drinking water a luxury, or are the state and federal agencies going to be able to come through to satisfy this service?
Yeah, what we're figured out, we've had a lot of people meeting one of the governor's committees to look at what are the options. When you look at the options, if they can afford to borrow low interest, that helps pay for some of this. It's an ability to maintain. Maintaining is much cheaper than trying to replace. So trying to get some of these older systems maintained should be our first goal before they get to the point of where they're failing and everything has to be replaced, because that is just not affordable. The second option would be for them to combine with a nearby system, which has would add to the customer base and make it more affordable if the neighboring system is willing to absorb them. But certainly putting more systems together is another option so that you can have more customers to pay for maintaining and replacing aging systems. The third option is actually to go back to the days that we moved from, which is if you cannot afford where you live to have a system and you cannot join a larger system, you may have to have your own well in your own yard. And that is not ideal, because those wells are shallow and it's not a good quality of water to begin with, and people have to pay dearly. Even if they decide, well, you know what, I can't afford a well, so I'm just going to get bottled water, I'm going to buy bottled water, that's not going to address their needs for public safety and firefighting and the things that they might need to protect life. So some tough decisions coming for these small communities. If they can't afford to borrow and they can't afford to pay, can they join? And if they can't join, do they go back to the days of everybody taking care of themselves in their own yard?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's critical that people start looking into what they're paying for and how much they're paying and what it costs to do business, and looking at their systems, reviewing their systems, looking to their leadership to provide them with information about their water systems. I think people need to be asking those questions to their leadership. When you look at who's responsible for these water systems, it's the leaders who run these systems, but they're elected many times, and it's the people who elect them. As a customer, you're not out of the loop. You need to be in the loop about the importance of making sure that business is being taken care of, that one, you're paying a rate that is reasonable, and not have an expectation that you're going to have a quality of water that you're not willing to pay for. So having said that, I've seen where we work with a community, they correct their issues, the water's much better, and then people complain about what they have to pay for that. So you have to look at the cost of having a community water system versus the cost of having your own individual wells and having to buy a bottle of water. It's much cheaper when you have larger numbers. And so they may look to see how they can pool resources. That's probably the best goal, is to look at what they can afford and to pool their resources with their neighbors.
Dr. Guidry, thank y'all very much. And y'all stay in touch.
We sure will.
We'll be back next week with a new edition of Behind the Lens. Your generous support makes our reporting possible. So please give a donation today at support.thelensnola.org. I'm Tom Wright. Thank you for getting Behind the Lens.